For much of her early life, Celai Abrams believed she was the daughter of a Chinese mother and a white father. When she was five, her mother abandoned the family. Celai, her brother and sister were then raised by the man that she looked upon as her father. But growing up in California and in Florida, Celai always felt different from her siblings. Her skin was darker and her hair curlier. Then, when she was 14, her dad revealed the truth. Her biological father was, in fact, a black man whose name Celai would never know. For years afterwards, she struggled to figure out who she was in a world that often saw race in black and white terms. She writes about that struggle in her new book, Black Lotus, A Woman's Search for Racial Identity. And Celai Abrams joins us to talk about her book. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
As you write, from the very beginning, you looked different from your siblings. And how did your parents explain your darker skin to you?
The way that it was rationalized was because I was born on the island of Hawaii. I was actually born in Wailuku, Maui. And as a four-year-old, as a five-year-old, I took what my dad said at face value. I mean, I believe him when he said there was an Easter bunny and Santa Claus. Right. So right. It took me a little bit to figure out.
At what age did that explanation just stop making sense to you and you began to question and wonder?
I was around the age of eight. He was engaged to the woman who would become my stepmother, his second wife, and her family. She is white. And I just remember being at a barbecue at her mother's home and staring at the sea of people. And I couldn't understand what was this chill in the air. And it was a very strange, surreal moment. It just clicked. I looked down at my arms and I noticed the skin color and I looked at everyone else and I said, oh my God, I'm not like them.
Mm. And after your dad divorced your mother, Daisy, and remarried, there were these issues where he just wouldn't touch. I mean, you write, there were three things in our household we never discussed: Daisy, the Vietnam War, and race. Despite having four children of various racial compositions and skin colors living under one roof, three of whom were half Chinese, there was no mention of race or our Chinese heritage. Mm-hmm. Your dad just didn't want to go there.
No, he didn't. I mean, and I know he was enraged. Part of it was his own need to preserve his anger and resentment over the failure of his marriage, but also, quite frankly, it's what I, you know, refer to as the privilege of his whiteness, the fact that he did not think that race was an issue, given the fact that he had converted to the Baha'i faith from Catholicism. You know, Baha'is believe in one race, the human race, and encourage interracial marriages as a way to eliminate this divisions and strife that occurs over racial categories. So it was just something that he opted to ignore.
Mm-hmm. And he kept this secret from you. When you were 14, you and your sister were actually telling racist jokes from a book when your father almost casually made this revelation. He pretty much dropped it on you like a hand grenade and walked away. Tell us about that moment.
Yeah, so back in the day, back when I was a youngin', there were these books, totally gross joke books, version one, version two, and I was reading this one joke, my sister was, and we were cackling about it, and the joke was, how do you stop an N-word from jumping on a bed? And then the punchline was, you put Velcro on the ceiling. And so my dad was in the garage, which was probably about 10 yards away. So he came inside to get a beer. And as he passed by, he just said very casually, I don't know why you're laughing, Celai. You're one. And he grabbed a beer, slammed the refrigerator door shut, and walked right back out into work on his Harley Davidson. And that was it. So at that moment, you could have knocked me over with a feather, because here it is that I'd been indoctrinated into this belief that to be black was bad. And it was subtle. I would say at that age, at 14, it wasn't vicious. It was just casual racism, casual dismissal that a lot of people have. And it was like waking up in an alternate universe. You know, like one day, here I am. You're black. Deal with it.
You write that the communities you were raised in were so very white, suburban California and then suburban Orlando, Florida. You write, everything I saw and heard was white. White music, white films, white TV shows, white neighborhoods, white little girls in my grade school, white family members after your father remarried. Were you at all aware of African-American culture, music, and history, or was that like a hand grenade too going off on you?
Well, first of all, black history is not taught, you know, as extensively as it should be within the U.S. educational system. You learn about Martin Luther King Jr., Abraham Lincoln freed the slaves, George Washington Carver cultivated the peanut.
It was a very cookie-cutter view.
It was very cookie-cutter, but I think that that's something that, that continues. I think that's something that is still highly problematic. So, no, I had no knowledge at all. The only idea and concepts that I had around blackness was what I saw on television, Good Times, which we didn't watch because that was a black show and we were not a black family. Whenever the Jacksons came on, we'd switch it to Donnie Marie. When Motown songs would come on to the radio, my dad would switch it to the Beatles. I mean, it's just a very subtle conditioning, the way that you just completely immerse yourself in this white world. So no, I had no idea.
And you kept the secret from your friends. I mean, you became this rebellious punk rocker, but there's an incident you write about where an African-American basketball player came up and tries to talk to you, and you blow him off like, what are you doing talking to me? You're not part of my culture.
And it ate at my soul because I knew I was lying, but I was terrified of what the consequences would be to me if people were to find out the truth. Because during my middle school years, particularly, I was exposed to almost daily vicious bullying because of the color of my skin, because of my name. The kids that I grew up with, because I was not white Anglo-Saxon Protestant, and because of the fact that I didn't have anyone around me of color to protect me, they went in for the kill. There were probably 20 black students at the high school that I attended, and they stayed very closely together, but I didn't hang out with them because I wasn't black.
You began to drink heavily. You left Florida for New York and worked hard to try to become a successful model. But alcohol kept derailing your ambitions. How much do you think your search for identity fed into your self-destructive behavior?
It's really hard to separate the two because addiction is a family disease. My parents, you know, there's, you know, on my mother's side, there's a long history of addiction. So, you know, when you start drinking at 13 years old and you're binge drinking and you're blacking out by 15, you don't know what's causing. Is it the chicken or the egg? Because the alcohol abuse is contributing towards your depression and all sorts of antisocial behaviors. And obviously, the self-medicating is not going to help you figure anything out. So I think it all comes together.
So, Lai, we know that race is a social construct. And we also know that it's a myth that we're in some kind of happy post-racial world. You're raising your two children. You very much want them to embrace their African-American identity. Tell us why.
I think it's incredibly important. One, for me as a woman who had to make a conscious decision to eliminate the black inferiority complex, my internalized racism, and love myself. It was very important that my children never experience what I experienced. You know, they've lived a very different life, but I felt it was extraordinarily important that they embrace their blackness. But there's a part in the book where I discuss how my daughter was identifying, self-identifying as multiracial. She'd say,
right, she sort of says, this is your problem, Mom. I'm multiracial, part Chinese, part African-American. Get over it.
Yeah, yeah. She said, I'm a quarter Dominican, a quarter Chinese, and half black. And I'm just like, okay, first of all, like, you need to understand something. You may have all of these mixtures in your background, but society is going to read you as a black woman. And as she's gotten older, she's seen me speak around issues on race and domestic violence, as well as media representation. And she now identifies as black.
Salai Abrams, her new memoir is Black Lotus, A Woman's Search for Racial Identity. Salai, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you for having me.